Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Nothing more positive than this. We got Betty Boop scratch-off tickets presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We're doing the Crab Cake Tour, and you can't have a Crab Cake Tour without a Crab Cake. Right, Don Moeller?
Well, full confession, did we just house ours in about 20 seconds?
I ate mine. This is not mine. I stole this one from Thuruv Ignaraj. We're doing a recon, by the way.
We wiped that out. And then in the meantime, check this out. See if I can do it without spilling the sauces. A new item coming from Fadley's on the website in the very near future.
Fried oysters.
Right now. Fried oysters. I'm telling you. If you love
tartar away from me. I want.
If you love fried oysters, this is it. The new Fadley's product.
Oh, boy.
Right? That's not a lie, right? That's what I'm saying.
I've never had a fried oyster in my life.
Oh, they're phenomenal. And these
I never eat fried oysters.
Incredibly plump.
God, that's delicious. Coming, the breading.
Coming to the Fadley's website, but you can come in downtown right now. Also, before we recon, we've got so much to talk about.
I need a napkin.
I have an update. I can't help you with a napkin. I've got so much.
I got so much to talk about.
Oh, come on. You're a germaphobe. Here we go. I asked Damie Hahn for an update. Everybody wants to know about the Catonsville location. And guess what?
I want to know if these are going to be available, these fried
oysters.
She
expects folks to see real action on that site. Some demolition, some renovations by early
summer.
Alicia
told me people call here and ask for reservations in Catonsville.
It's coming, and those of you who have seen the sign
I guess I've done a good job of talking about it last year.
For over a year. It is coming. You will see action this summer. That will make folks in the region very happy. So we'll have Fadley's at the New Market next door here on Packer Street. We'll have Fadley's in the middle of the village at Catonsville. Fadley's everywhere. Listen, we're waiting on Attorney General Brian Frosch. We're waiting on Lieutenant Governor candidate Aruna Miller.
I feel like I need a beer with that. But I mean, I'm not lying to you.
I'm telling you.
It's a little spicy. Do you serve beer at this hour, Damie? Sure.
We'll get Damie to get you. What kind of beer do you want?
By the way, I got breaking news.
Bud Light, Corona. What do you want?
Oh, I drink that Amstel right there. I drink that lager. I'll drink that Edgar Allan Poe. Is that a Raven beer?
We'll get that.
I think it might be Raven. It's my buddy's place. All right, so look, we're doing a recon. And before you get into whatever structure that the former Baltimore County executive wants.
I'm going to have this oyster while you're rattling on.
Okay, fair enough. Just don't spit it back at me.
No,
you have a tendency to do that when you and I get together.
Go ahead.
It freaks me out. So we were at the Hippodrome the other day. We came down on Saturday to see Dear Evan Hansen. And you love the show?
Seen it twice.
Okay, but you've seen a lot of shows twice.
Damie,
you don't
could he get a beer, an Edgar Allan Poe beer or something?
This just tastes like it needs beer. I mean, I'm being honest with you. I can't eat this without having beer.
All right, a beer on the way. Go ahead. Evan Hansen, I've seen it twice. You posted, and it was actually the first thing that I wanted to talk about.
I know it was.
Because it's what I love about art. I know Anthony McCarthy, who's still here with us from Thuruv Ignaraj's campaign. I know he loves art and theater. One of the things I love about theater, I love about the arts, is that it is so subjective. That, same with movies, you never know who will like, not like, be lukewarm about a movie. My takeaway is that Jen liked Evan Hansen more than you did. I would have lost a big bet because I know how emotional you can get when things touch your soul. I would have bet the ranch that you loved Evan Hansen the way I and most of my friends
didn't buy into it.
Which I have to ask you, and maybe I said to you, I think in a text back and forth,
the story got too Three's Company far fetched for me. It went beyond the realm for
well,
me.
Well, see, maybe that's the educator, and many of the. It's funny we're having Cheryl Boast, president of MS.
No, I knew when it had that element of the teacher part of you with the wayward child, or the wayward children in a lot of cases, right?
Well, it's
it was a great life lesson. I didn't dislike the show, Don. I just...
Oh, no, I know. I'm not suggesting you... I'm saying Cheryl Boast was there. You're looking for your crab cake? There it is. We'll give it to you.
This is it. This is your crab cake.
That is yours.
No.
No, we promoted it.
She had one. Okay, all right. She already had one.
But anyway, Cheryl Bost was there from MSEA, and I ran into her, and I saw her at intermission, and she said, oh, boy, are you right? And what I had said to her before the show was, Cheryl, you will know every child. And that's what every educator who has ever seen Dear Evan Hansen has said. We all know Evan.
By the way, they never use the word suicide in the play, and then they don't really...
Yeah.
To me, they should be doing suicide prevention.
I think
awareness.
That's a really unfair criticism that some people have made, and I have a very good friend who made that point.
Does it speak
and
for
again,
itself, you think, if you sat there
well,
for 2 hours?
Well, I think when one of the characters says in the play, Connor killed himself last night, that's pretty clear. You don't have to say he committed suicide, but when I say to my friend, Connor killed himself last night, Connor committed suicide. That's what that means. And again, on a personal note, I've made peace a long time ago, but you know, my dad committed suicide, so I understand the emotions. And what I thought the show captured, and let me go back to the characters. Every educator in that audience, and I think most parents, recognize Evan Hansen, the poor young man who just is a square peg in a round hole. He is lonely. He doesn't fit in.
Mm. Let me start by saying this. I walk into the theater, beautiful, good time. My wife had a couple drinks. It was fun. We went to Amici's, and I knew nothing about the show. Like, literally, I made sure I didn't know the plot. I didn't know this. I knew nothing. I really wanted to enjoy it. And in the first 5 minutes, I said, oh, it's about an autistic child. Like, I thought the show in the first 5 minutes was about autism. Maybe the first 10 minutes until the suicide happens, right? Like, I literally looked at him and thought, oh, it's an autism piece. You know, that's what I thought. I didn't think of it as sheltered, normal child who's just out of sync with
well,
things.
He may... You may be able to intuit that he was somewhere
on the
spectrum.
No, he was not autistic. No, I wouldn't even say
that.
No,
I said
maybe.
You watched the first few minutes.
Okay.
But then you switch to the young man who does commit suicide, who does kill himself, Connor. And Connor is angry. He's rebellious. And life does not work for Connor. And I guess what I'm trying to articulate is why I think it works on so many levels for educators. Then Connor's sister... And we all know this, and again, having worked as a counselor...
Opposites.
Well, not only opposites, but the loneliness and feeling as if, despite all of my efforts to do everything right, we still spend an inordinate amount of time in our family focusing on Connor. So you're sitting there and you go, boy, I've counseled a lot of those children. And then there's the young... overachieving young lady in every club, student council type A, doesn't sleep, can't do enough to make the school great and to build up her college resume. And I'm immediately seeing all of the faces of the kids I've worked with. So on that level, that play works for everyone. And then the part that I'd be curious if it resonated with you, the part that gets me every time, I call it, it's my Field of Dreams moment. It's when Costner says, hey, Dad, do you want to have a catch in Field of Dreams? It's when Evan is over at Connor's parents' house.
Oh, my God. I found that to be the most unbelievable scene. I just didn't buy the scene.
Oh, my Lord.
See, maybe I didn't like the father, like the acting. I don't know. I thought the mother, Evan Hansen's mother, was the best actor on the stage.
She was phenomenal.
I thought at the end of the show.
Well, Evan was phenomenal. I saw Ben Platt. And
I thought the love interest sister was also, she was just a beautiful girl. And so she had, that was a good part, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, it's, again, art is subjective. I will say, and a shout out to our buddy Ron Legler, this cast and my son-in-law and daughter agree. They saw it a few days later. This cast is every bit on a par with Ben Platt and the Broadway
When I go to a Hippodrome, I don't think I'm getting a second rate. I mean, I'm getting a Broadway caliber production. So we got a lot of things going on, right? I mean, we got baseball, football.
Well, I want to talk.
We got Terps. You're all upset about this Terps coach.
Well, I feel better now. We'll talk a little bit about that. I feel better after.
Are you willing to say you were a knee jerk reaction?
Well, not necessarily. And again,
I'm never taken aback because I think like I love you. I love you. I think you're crazy about sports. Like, I think your opinions and the, like, it's,
I love sports.
Me doing the radio guy, everybody's upset 5 minutes after this guy gets hired, and all I did at 100,000 feet, I don't know, I don't watch college basketball the way I did, like, I don't know much about Seton Hall. I mean, everything I know about Seton Hall was Pedro Carlissimo, right? I looked at it, and from 100,000 feet, I thought, they hired a basketball coach. They hired a lifer, invested, youngish enough to be hungry, hasn't really won anything and dedicated his life to this, and a guy who's plugged in and a guy who considered this a dream job, a destination job. Okay, I mean, I don't know what more you want. It's not a top 20 program. It really isn't.
Well, that's where I would disagree. It certainly has there's no reason for the University of Maryland, given its proximity between D.C. and Baltimore, and as they call it, the DMV, to not be a top 20 program.
But it's not. But it's not.
Again, but that is a reflection, I think,
on who's been in charge. It can be, and you hire someone that you think can take you there.
When you say...
What did you want? What name did you... Did you have a...
I go back to...
They say Mike Bray, or you're like, that's good? Or
no, the reason I wasn't crazy about Bray is what you alluded to in the hiring of this gentleman, and that is that Bray was in his 60s. I like going younger. My favorite phrase of the past few months is the one that our buddy John Feinstein shared, and that's in his book, and he said, Gary Williams always says, the scoreboard doesn't lie, meaning your record is what it is. Scoreboard doesn't lie. What gives me real pause is that the new coach has been to the NCAA five times, and he's been one and done four out of five. Now, that's a fact. We cannot like that fact. We can say there were extenuating circumstances. But the bottom line is, forget the Sweet 16, which he only made once. He was only able to get to the round of 32 once out of five times. The other thing is, his overall winning percentage at Seton Hall is under 60%. Now, having said that, I've since read comments by Gary Williams, my brother, who I think's one of the best basketball coaches ever on the planet, says without a doubt this guy can coach. So maybe on a bigger stage in the DMV, he'll be able to get it done. Evidently, he plays a ferocious. I'm not familiar with seeing Seton Hall play. Evidently, he plays a very tenacious defense, which I will be happy with. Evidently, it's more of a pattern slowdown offense. Not crazy about that. Listen, one of my takes, and I don't know. I'm curious. You and I really haven't talked about it. I don't know if you're a March Madness guy or not. When you say love sports, that opening weekend of March Madness to me, there are a few events that rise to that level in my sports life. Masters weekend does. The U.S. Open in golf does. I absolutely love that opening weekend. And this one didn't disappoint. Tharu Vignaraja leaving us. Again, it was a pleasure to have Tharu on earlier this morning, running for state's attorney. That weekend was pretty amazing. Again, I think the Big Ten weakness was on display for everyone to see. That big mauling, slow style of play just doesn't translate to the tournament, right? Scoring 45.
Well, it hasn't for 40 years.
It has not. Correct. It is not.
Even the Fab Five didn't do it that way.
And I saw someone write a pretty thoughtful article that said the Big Ten schools need to come together and really analyze what they're trying to do in terms of their success. But I'm curious, and I've got some numbers that fascinated me because I wanted to check, did our emotions match the facts? But are you a March Madness guy? I'm curious.
Always have been.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't know. We've just never talked about it. You know,
am I a March Madness? This is funny because, like, this perception. I get this every day of my life for 28 years.
No, but I mean,
I'm just serious. Like, I've watched every March Madness.
But not everybody
is. I've been
is.
On planes everywhere. I've watched Steve Francis lose in Knoxville. I met Julio, my dear friend, and going out on the Joe Smith when he hit his head on the backboard and fell in Oakland. I'm perceived as sort of not knowing anything about any of this stuff, and it's like,
oh no, I wasn't.
Mike Jaskolski last night. I'm bored with it a little bit, and I told Jazz this last night because of all of this commotion, and part of this, and I'll say this to you, being an old school, going back to Magic Johnson and having brackets, I was passing brackets around for a buck when you were the guidance counselor in 1982.
No. I'm not suggesting
literally,
in any way.
Joe Barry, Barry Carroll and Purdue.
The question is different.
Wait
a minute.
No.
But the question is different. Not everyone is really excited to watch what I call the drama. And I think it literally...
Well, the St. Peter's thing makes people watch.
Right. And it's the first weekend, right? It's the first weekend. And here's why. You know, my sense was, okay, I thought, man, lower seeds, it's really exciting to see lower seeds win. So I thought, I wonder if lower seeds really do win in any significant percentage. So I went on, I thought, well, in the round of 64...
Well, 10s beat 7s all the time.
Well, in 16% of the games this year, in the round of 64, the lower seed won. And when you got to the round of 32, just under 20% of the lower seeds won. But here was what was even more fascinating to me. And I know something's happening when Linda looks up from her book, right? Because Linda's not a March Madness person. She'll sit and read her book while I amuse myself and text my grandkids back and forth. I know something's happening when she looks up from the book with 4 or 5 minutes to go. And I thought, man, every one of these games is overwhelming percentage of these games is close and can come down the last 2 minutes. Well, I wanted to know if that was true. Well, in the round of 64, 40% of the games were decided by 10 or fewer points. 40% of the games. And the round of 32, ready for this? 75%. Of the games were 10 points or fewer. So I think that's
well, college basketball has narrowed the gap
yes.
between where
yes.
Georgetown and North Carolina and Kentucky were versus Murray State or the UMBCs being able
correct.
To beat the Virginias or the St. Peter's. There's a lot of great kids that play ball. They all get on the court. Duke doesn't have a 12th guy on the end of the bench now that could start and play at Fairfield because he would go to Fairfield and play.
Now, again, these are the discussions that you and I love to have. This is where I am a sucker for the sports narrative. And you're,
I didn't mean that.
You misinterpreted
what I said. I think your sports fandom, the fandom, the zealot in you, forces these knee-jerk, ridiculous online reactions when the Terps hire a coach, that it's just the worst thing. But that's 90% of the... That's what I dealt with as a sports radio show host, which was... irrational.
Well,
irrational.
But my reaction to the hiring of this coach wasn't irrational. It was based on data. It was based on the fact that they just hired a fella who had less than a 60% winning percentage, who was 4 out of 5 times one and done, and had only been to one Sweet 16. My point was...
hiring a guy that was a city school teacher that took the graduation rate from 28% to 42%, and you'd say in a county we're doing 90%. How can you be doing 40%? You got a different condition. Recruiting to Seton Hall and winning games. James of Seton Hall is a different game.
That's the argument. That listen, I'm going to root really, really hard because I like to root for the Maryland Terps.
You know when I get pissed off is when they hire a criminal. When Deshaun Watson gets $250 million talks to the girls.
Well, we'll talk about that.
When they chased that clown around as a football coach years ago. The guy, Price, was that his name? They never hired him. Apparently,
I don't remember.
Plank wanted him or whatever. But getting troubled... coaches getting troubled people. This is a guy who's a lifer ball coach. I mean, I can't be upset about his qualifications because I feel like he's qualified. You and I disagreed on that.
Oh no,
I
think by all accounts, Gary Williams and others, certainly the Patino, not the cheating part of Patino, but the coaching part, pedigree is a good thing. And as I said, my coaching guru, Mike Moeller, who is the most successful girls basketball coach in the history of Maryland, says this guy can flat-out coach. I want to jump back to the sports narrative because I will tell you, and I plead guilty to the fact, I love moments like Sunday when Coach K is in his final run coaching against Tom Izzo, two of the greatest basketball coaches ever, and K's run can end at any moment, and the game comes down to the final 2 minutes, and the end of the game when Kay and Izzo embrace, and you can see that Izzo says some nice things. I love those sports moments. And what I always say to you...
Well, that's orchestrated by the committee.
Despite...
That if they both win a game, they would play, which is great.
Yeah. And, I mean, it was
they're trying to make a good fight. They're trying to make a good tournament.
Wonderful matchup. And that's the stuff that does float my boat as far as sports goes. Let's talk about the Deshaun Watson thing. Because, like you, I'm scratching my head now.
These are the reasons I don't like sports anymore, right? This is what takes me away.
Well, I think it's amazing, Nestor. And it seems to me that the Ravens, for better or worse, and it may be worse, and we have to be prepared for it, are trying to resist this trend. It fascinates me. I think we see it in Denver, right, with Russell Wilson. The Rams win the Super Bowl by saying, draft picks be damned. Let's go all in and win this thing. It looks to me like owners and GMs around the league go, oh, well, that idea building from the draft, that's a bunch of baloney. We had it wrong. Let's just go win now. Other than that, now I understand Watson's a little younger, but it's hard for me to imagine. I mean, maybe it shouldn't be. You're going down to the meetings, man.
I'm going.
Oh, I can't wait for you to report back.
This will be the most interesting owners' meetings ever. I'll be in Florida all weekend just because of the tumult in the league. And the league has pulled away, like out on the Autobahn, away from all these other sports. Maybe the NBA's got a whisper. But baseball is destroyed. All the college sports aren't what they used to be. You're asking me if I still like March Madness. Because it's diminished. March Madness is diminished by these kids not going to school 4 years. It's diminished
and the
by
transfer, the transfer. The transfer portal.
It's diminished by all of it.
Transfer portal's a great example of something that I would have supported in concept. Because I never liked the idea that kids had to sit out and coaches didn't. I thought that was insane. So in
how about the part where the coaches make money and the kids don't make any money?
Right. That part was bad too. So all of that bothered me. But in as it's played out, the transfer portal has not been positive. But what I want you to watch and what I'm having trouble understanding the Cleveland mindset is I can't imagine, Nestor, that we're not looking at a 6-8 game suspension. That's 40-50% of the season. So you're saying I'm going to spend $240 million for a quarterback.
They think in 2025 and 26, his name will be good.
Right.
It'll be like what happened with Roethlisberger with that girl in Georgia. And there's very little doubt that Ben Roethlisberger was predatory. But Ben Roethlisberger probably should have gone to jail if he would have read all that stuff, right? Rehabilitated himself. Ray Lewis rehabilitated himself into the Hall of Fame, right?
So that's what they're banking on.
They're banking on that in 2024, they'll have the best quarterback in football or one of those quarterbacks that can help them win, and they will help it. But I also this goes back to, man, at the core of everything you and I talk about, we talk about leadership. And this is where you and I get sideways with the Orioles as to who's really running the place. Like, who is making the decision to give him the money, to give away the draft picks, all of that. I happen to have a friend that was a head coach of the Cleveland Browns, right?
Right.
Mike Pettine. And Mike Pettine would explain it like to anybody. The owner walked into the room in the middle of the draft and said,
right,
I'm taking Johnny football.
Right.
And everybody in the room knew he couldn't play.
But that's not
and
the
everybody
Ravens,
knew,
yeah.
But
that's not the Raven model.
That's the Browns model.
Right.
That's the Browns model.
Right.
So that's what
probably
happened.
What happened
so
here.
There was no grown-up here.
Correct.
And the real brushback about this at the owners' meetings, and I would think if I had Eric DaCosta on the bat phone right now, which I don't, but if I did, he'd say, well, and the first thing we said Monday morning, which is, this made it a lot harder to sign Lamar Jackson.
Right.
You David Modell told me, it was at dinner after his tenure was up, not before his time was up, but he told me when he signed John Ogden, he gave Ogden all that money, a lot of extra money for a tackle, gave him stupid money. It put pressure on the 1, 2, and 3 teams
sure.
to give more money, right? But David needed certainty here that he wasn't going to have his number one pick hold out, right? They were selling tickets here. So to give John Ogden another million or two at that time felt like good business to him until he got to the owners' meetings, and they're all like, what are you doing, dude?
Right.
Every time at the time, Tom Glavine came up to me at the All-Star game. So Messina pitched well with 92-3-4. Mark's coming on the show tomorrow. I'll ask him. So it's 95 or 96 All-Star game. Maybe it's 97 All-Star game. Tom Glavine comes up to me and knows I'm from Baltimore. And I know Tom a little bit. He's like, hey, what's Messina doing? What's he doing in Baltimore? And it must have been a year Messina wasn't in the All-Star game, because I guess he could have gone over and talked to him. He's like, dude, he's not toeing the line on a union.
Right.
He's got you don't give Peter Angelos a sweetheart
discount.
Deal.
Right.
You don't give hometown discounts. We're in a union here. You're killing me and Maddox down in Atlanta, and you're screwing up Jimmy Key in Toronto. Like, all of that, right? So this wasn't that they just signed him, or they gave him a little bit of money, or they gave him a Lamar money, gave him $80 million, $100 million, which would have been bad enough. They gave a guaranteed contract. There are only two other players in the National Football League have. That's the part that the owners are going to really dislike about
Jimmy
Haslam.
Listen, and it, for me, and again, you have a close relationship with Eric. I've gone back and forth so many times on the Lamar situation. First of all, I think Lamar is one of the great athletes that I've ever seen on a field. Do I know that he is a Super Bowl caliber quarterback yet? I don't. I think he potentially could be.
If your running game's good enough and you play defense,
if your running game's good enough, and I think he can win a Super Bowl. Now, having said that, I think, given what we just saw with Watson, the Attorney General's walking in. Brian Frost going to join us in a moment or two. We're delighted to have him. We'll wrap it up here. I think there is reason that the Ravens probably at this point should not sign Lamar, should let it play out, see what the results are, and then if they can't long-term him next year, then I think they go ahead and trade him and get the boatload of picks. Real quick before we get to It's changed their hand.
Yeah, well, it's changed everyone's hand, and I think that's the point.
Before we get the Attorney General on,
Better get him a crab cake.
Hey, we're going to get him a crab cake. And
by the way, I'm excited about this one.
Well, one of the best elected officials ever in the state of Maryland. You went crazy on social media about the rendering of left field, and Mark Messina and I thought you'd lost your mind. What didn't you like about the new left field in Camden Yards?
There's nothing wrong with it before, except the pitching.
Well, I don't know. It was 364 yards
to
the power alley.
Ballpark, so play to it. Go get some guys. As Earl Weaver would say, go get some guys and pull the bat up. Hit three run homers, is
what
he'd
say. You didn't dislike the nook and cranny that they've created.
That's terrible.
It's quirky. It's quirky. Is it any more terrible than the left field stands jutting out in Fenway?
By the way, I want you to go to your phone right now before the Attorney General calls.
I know what it looks like.
Because I know I've already pissed you off 5 minutes ago. Happy baseball season, Oriole fans. Total payroll. The Dodgers are spending $271 million. The Mets are spending $249 million. The Yankees are spending $235 million. The bottom three teams, the Cleveland Guardians at $35 million. The Pittsburgh Pirates at $35 million. And bringing up the caboose, as they do in the standings every year, the Baltimore Orioles, $30 million, $300 million.
And
Luke
that won't
says,
be long.
Do you really have to be this bad? Is it paramount that you're this bad? I would say it's paramount that Mr. Angelos sees $4.9 million between him and the Pirates, and that's in Mr. Angelos' pocket.
And as I always say,
and Mrs. Angelos,
as I always say, if the Orioles cured cancer tomorrow, you said that you would say they
better not make me Attorney General.
You would have said they should have cured it yesterday. That's the recon. We've got to get to Attorney General.
All right,
Brian Fry. Look at these
fried oysters down here. We're coming to Catonsville.
Wait a minute. These are coming to the Fadley's website. Near future, but you
can't. How'd you get the tartar sauce in the cocktail?
I probably did that.
God,
makes you crazy.
Such a sloppy.
All right, the recon, everybody.
Since 1982, my guidance counselor. Lord, give me guidance. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. Betty Boop tickets, we're giving them away down here at Fadley's. We're going to be at Greenmount Station. We are going to be at G&A Coney Island Hot Dog in White Marsh next month, and we're also getting back to Nacho Mama's. Back for more, live from Fadley's. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking. Baltimore. Positive.